It is Wednesday, June 12th, 2024, and this is Ozarks at Large. I'm Matthew Moore.
I'm Kyle Kellums. Today, we lace up our shoes for Global Running Day.
But I think there's something about, like, running that it gives you a feeling like no other. It's both pain and kind of, like, pleasure.
Plus, celebrating freedom at the 2024 Northwest Arkansas Juneteenth Observation.
America celebrated its freedom in 1776, so Black Americans were technically not free until 89 years later. So it is important to celebrate, even if you are not Black or of African American descent.
And how three legends battled Jim Crow from the bandstand to change America.
Governor of Arkansas, Orville Faubus, said, "No way are we going to let Blacks into our school." President Eisenhower said, "I'm not going to send in federal troops to protect these kids." And Louis Armstrong spoke out.
We begin with the news from NPR.
Northwest Arkansas Pride returns June 28th through the 30th for its 20th annual parade and festival. Other weekend events include the 4th annual Trans March, Glitterville at George's Majestic Lounge, and High Tea Dance and Pool Party at Mount Sequoia. More at nwapride.org or NWA Equality's Facebook or Instagram.
This is Ozarks at Large for Wednesday, June 12th, 2024. I'm Matthew Moore. Ozarks at Large is a production of 91.3 KUAF, a listener-supported service of the University of Arkansas. Later on our show, a trip to the Ozark Natural Science Center at Lake Fayetteville to hear about some of their summer programming. That's in about 8 minutes. Last week, on June 5th, several local running groups celebrated Global Running Day. Ozarks at Large's Daniel Carruth laced up his tennis shoes and went to one event to hear from runners on why they love the sport.
On an unseasonably cool June morning, several dozen people are packed on the sidewalk in front of the Onyx Coffee Shop in Bentonville. It's just before daybreak, but you can still make out the sea of neon shorts, headbands, and swaths of moisture-wicking fabric.
So we are at Onyx in downtown Bentonville. We have a collab with Onyx and Nike and then Rush Running that we're putting together just a fun run, little event for Global Running Day, followed up with some free coffee and free Nike gear and raffling off some free shoes.
That's Allie Kaminsky, the hiring and training manager with Rush Running, the local staple running shop that is putting on this event for Global Running Day. She says while it's not unusual to see groups of runners out on an early morning, it is unusual to see them all together.
So Global Running Day every year, there's always a bunch of random groups that get together and run their various routes, whatever they want to run. Today, Nike is actually dropping the Nike Pegasus 41, so they kind of joined us together and said, let's bring all these groups together, have a little fun, run a group run together, and enjoy Global Running Day.
And Nike representative David Target stands behind a table covered with different sizes and colors of those Pegasus 41 shoes for runners to slip on and try out before they hit the pavement.
It is a very versatile everyday trainer, good for just about every type of running, long, short, fast, slow, everything in between. Nike loves to come out and support the local communities. Rush Running has an awesome running community, and Onyx is the best place to get coffee around here, so merge all three worlds of running, the best place to get running shoes, and the best way to start your morning. So we're just getting the community together, and it's great to see everyone out this morning.
As 6 a.m. approaches, Rush Running shop owner Mike Rush gathers people for announcements and a welcome.
Happy Global Running Day! I want to first shout out to Nike David. Everybody calls him Nike David, David Target.
Soon, the runners make their way across the Bentonville Square and down Central Avenue for a quick 5K. Mike Rush, who has been promoting running in the area for decades, says today's partnership with Nike and Onyx may be a little selfish.
I love these kids that work in there. The baristas are awesome. They all know me. I feel like a celebrity when I walk in, and they take good care of me. So every year I give them, all the baristas, I give them free shoes. And then my Nike rep, who's David, who is just an awesome kid, was like, "Hey, can we do a collaboration with Onyx?" And I'm just like, "Hell yes, let's do it." So here it is, this culmination, all his hard work. So I'm just here for the coffee.
Still, he says the event isn't really just about running or about promotions, but about building community.
I mean, this whole Northwest Arkansas corridor is all about community. That's why I opened here in 2008. I love this. Like, you can wave, you can like make a little call, you know, and 15 minutes later you can have a group like this show up. So I love the community here, and all the runners here, they're one big happy family, and I love that.
And for a lot of the people who came out this morning, they say that camaraderie is why they run in the first place. Namashi Abbey says she's been running for at least the past 10 years.
I just love, like, the community here that is very based on running. I mean, a very active community. I personally love running and have been at Rush events for years and years. I love coming out and supporting the community when I can.
Friends Tony, Chris, and Raphael sip coffee at a table outside after their run. They say having running groups and events like this one can help create friendships among people who otherwise might never meet.
So I started running about a year ago, and I didn't expect it to be like this, especially in this area. I didn't know that there was a community like this. So, yeah, to get up at, you know, 5 in the morning and come here to see this many people is really exciting.
And it's cool to have a community that works at different companies. Like, Tony works at a different company, but we're friends. We got a group of guys that get out on Sunday afternoons and go run. It just keeps you connected with friends, you know, as you get older and have families and go off in life.
It's crazy how many people run here. And so I think when you're surrounded by a lot of people that like to do this and that want to do it, it's easy to find a group to go do that, I guess.
And for Michelle Hood, who came in this morning from Bella Vista, she says the sport has pushed her to challenge herself more.
I started running in college because it was a cheap way to exercise, and kept up with it over the years. And then when I moved to Bentonville, the area, the energy and the excitement for running is so great that it inspired me to do a lot more. And so since then, I've done about 40 marathons and more than that on half marathons, and started my trek on Abbott Global World Majors, and hopefully we'll finish that up next year.
Ben Ledbetter works for Rush Running at the Bentonville store and is a running coach at John Brown University. He says when it comes to sport or exercise, there's something about running that just resonates with people.
I think it's just the shared pain and trials of training. No one really enjoys going on a run by themselves as much as they do when there's other people around to suffer with them. So both daily training and then on race day, being surrounded by a bunch of 150, 200 people that are also sweaty as you are, kind of makes it a little bit easier and more enjoyable.
And Raphael Levy agrees. He says he usually runs alone, but this Global Running Day event has inspired him to find a group of his own.
For the longest time, I would have said that I would have never been caught doing this at 6 in the morning running. But I think there's something about like running that it gives you a feeling like no other. It's both pain and kind of like pleasure. So I think the combination of both makes it somewhat acceptable.
And for anyone new to running or nervous about sweating in a group of strangers, Mike Rush says there's no need to be afraid.
That's the great thing with our area is no pace is unwelcome. Like, you've got 16-minute milers and you've got 5-minute milers rolling around town. So and everybody's always accepting and greet you with open arms. So definitely don't be shy. You got to put one foot in front of the other and go. That's all.
For Ozarks at Large, I'm Daniel Carruth.
Yep, this is for a free pair of shoes we're going to draw in a minute.
Later on our show, observing Juneteenth with Freedom Festival.
Would love for people of all races to celebrate, because I want them to understand how important it is that we are considered to be free. Now, we still have a long way to go, but to be considered free in 2024 is for everybody to celebrate together.
The annual Northwest Arkansas Juneteenth observation and celebration is Saturday in downtown Springdale, and we'll have a preview ahead.
Thank you.
This is Ozarks at Large. Earlier this year, we reported on the Ozark Natural Science Center's new Lake Fayetteville satellite location. Their grand opening was May 18th, and now, just under 1 month later, the center is already bustling with activity. Ozarks at Large's Jack Travis visited the center yesterday to learn more about what they have in store for the rest of the summer.
The Ozark Natural Science Center's new satellite location on the shores of Lake Fayetteville has only been open for a few months. Still, Education and Community Program Manager Liz Hill says they already have their hands full. Hill was busy supervising kids attending the center's day camp yesterday. She says they were playing a game based on some of the creatures the group spotted during a hike earlier that day.
It was great. They found so many things along the way. Mushrooms, gulls, wildflowers, fossils. Of course, every time we got to a new vantage point of the lake, turtles and herons and fish jumping out of the water and yeah.
Hill says it's important to expose young people to the natural environment around them, and the ONSC's Lake Fayetteville Learning Center is a perfect place to do just that.
I think it keeps just that passion for learning alive when you're discovering new things all the time, and what better place to do that than out in nature, because there's always so much to explore. I mean, I have been doing this for years and years and still find new things all the time out there. So it's just exciting. It keeps that curiosity and that, you know, that scientific, I guess, inspiration alive, you know, just being curious, wanting to know more. As you discover more, it gives you more questions about, you know, well, why is it that way? How does that work? And that's the heart of science right there, so.
Day camps are just one offering at the ONSC's satellite location, with events taking place throughout the summer. This Saturday, June 15th, the center will host an exploratory hike in the morning, followed by an art gallery that afternoon. Hill says guided day hikes, or Ozark explorations, have been a staple at the ONSC's main campus in Huntsville. However, getting to the main campus can be difficult. She hopes the new Lake Fayetteville explorations will open the activity to people who live in Northwest Arkansas's urban spaces.
It's an hour drive out to the main campus there in Madison County, and it's down a long dirt road, and so it's just, you know, logistically not as easy for a lot of people to get out there, especially if they don't have, you know, the right kind of vehicles and don't have the time and the funds to pay for the gas to go that far out. So we really did want to be able to have more experiences that are close to urban environments. And, you know, you can ride the bike trail all the way around the lake as well. So you could come from other cool parks and things that are here around Lake Fayetteville as well.
After the hike, the center will host an open house and art gallery featuring work from ONSC's executive director, Rose Brown. ONSC staff will open the Lake Fayetteville Center, and everyone is encouraged to stop by and check out the new space. Hill hopes the more adult-oriented event will encourage older people to take an interest in their environment and allow those who already are an up-close look at what the ONSC does.
Yeah, we get questions actually a lot of times when we describe some of our summer camps from adults, like, when can I come to camp, you know? And so we do try to have a good balance of offerings for youth and for families, but also adult workshops.
The center will host another day camp at Lake Fayetteville next week, with more throughout the summer at its main campus in Huntsville. For a full list of ONSC's summer events, you can visit our website, ozarksatlarge.com. For Ozarks at Large, I'm Jack Travis.
Governor Sarah Huckabee Sanders has called a special session of the legislature to begin on Monday, June 17th. On social media, the governor said, quote, "I am calling a special session to give Arkansans hurting from Bidenflation income and property tax relief." The agenda will also include appropriating a budget for the Arkansas Game and Fish Commission, something that did not happen before the end of the fiscal session earlier this year. We'll hear from two legislators about the special session on tomorrow's edition of Ozarks at Large.
KUAF's Listening Lab series T, The Transgender Experience in Arkansas, is now fully released, featuring seven remarkable trans guests fully coming out about their lives.
Come out when you're safe, and coming out is a massive step in the process of becoming more mentally safe in yourself, in your community.
The more visibility that trans folks get in the media, the more anti-trans bills there are. And I think people that are writing these bills are afraid of what they don't know.
We are not trying to change your children. We're not trying to convert them. We don't have an agenda. More people are coming out as trans just because they have a safe place to do it. We've always been here. We've always been here.
To watch our groundbreaking 8-part multimedia series, T, The Transgender Experience in Arkansas, search listeninglabkuaf.com/TEA. T is supported by KUAF's contributing listeners.
This is Ozarks at Large. I'm Kyle Kellums. June 19th is a day celebrating freedom in the United States. It was that date in 1865 when Union soldiers arrived in Galveston Bay, Texas, to affirm that that state's 250,000 enslaved people were, in fact, free 2 years following the Emancipation Proclamation. Saturday, the Northwest Arkansas Observation of Juneteenth will again be hosted on Emma Avenue in downtown Springdale and again called Freedom Festival. We asked Roe Bailey and Anthony Ball with Interform and Music Moves, respectively, to come to the Anthony and Susan Hoy News Studio yesterday to give us a preview. Interform and Music Move, two of the organizations helping organize the Freedom Festival. I asked them about celebrating and observing Juneteenth in 2024.
Some people still don't know what Juneteenth is or what it means. For those who don't know what it means, Juneteenth is in 1865 when Black Americans were officially free. So as we know, America celebrated its freedom in 1776. So Black Americans were technically not free until 89 years later. So it is important to celebrate, even if you are not Black or of African American descent, because it is an important day for your Black peers and coworkers, family members, that kind of thing. So in 2024, I think the bigger, especially in Northwest Arkansas, the bigger that this event gets, the more that people are comfortable with celebrating it and comfortable with understanding it. Now, as if you're a non-Black person, some people, the frequently asked questions about Juneteenth is like, should I celebrate? Am I allowed to celebrate?
Concerned about appropriation?
Correct. It varies for different people. I personally would love for people of all races to celebrate because I want them to understand how important it is that we are considered to be free. Now, we still have a long way to go, but to be considered free in 2024 is for everybody to celebrate together.
I would just simply add, if you're excited about freedom, this holiday is for you. It doesn't matter who it's for. You know, this month we celebrate Pride Month as well too, and I think the name Freedom Festival was just really, really appropriate because we wanted it to be something where everybody could celebrate. There's always a level of, I mean, we're always in this pursuit of freedom, liberty, and justice. So it's just an appropriate thing. It's always a constant journey, and once another block of people get that 100% freedom, I think it should just be celebrated.
Absolutely. It's like kind of what, to piggyback off of what Anthony said, there's a lot of talk about freedom, especially in the South. Like, it's our independence and freedom is not free. You know, there's that kind of narrative. Mm-hmm. But it's like, okay, we'll have the same, you know, energy when it comes to Black Americans celebrating their freedom. So if you are as passionate about freedom as you say you are, as your bumper sticker says you are, as the flag in your lawn says that you are, then celebrating Freedom Festival this Saturday should be on your radar.
It's the fifth annual celebration here, right?
Yes, yes.
Freedom's grown.
You said so you
big. It's growing.
Yes. It's huge. The music, I always get excited about the music and the food.
And the food. Don't forget the food.
This year's musical stars are Donnell Jones and Twista and Cameo, which I'm the most excited about. I told you I was like 80. So talk about the, you know, the...
Well, shout out to Cameo. They're celebrating 50 years of funk music this year.
Wow.
And I was super... When we got to talking to them, they were talking about this tour they're on. They're going all over the place. They tour all the time. These 70s bands and 80s bands, mm-hmm. they don't stop. It's like in their bones. Mm-hmm. So we're super excited to have them. Of course, we got to have something for the young folks and the hip-hop lovers. Twista, he's a platinum artist from the early 2000s. Donnell Jones, which, you know, he's a Billboard top 100 artist. And of course, everybody knows Funk Factory as well. They'll be performing, and there's a new gospel choir that's in the area, the Arkansas Gospel Chorale, which is actually under the Music Moves. So they'll be performing as well too. We have a fashion show with Interform, and we have a dance group, MKDB, that's from Fort Smith, that's going to be with us as well too. So fun packed day as far as the music. Of course, we also have food trucks and arts and craft. Ro always loves the food. Our partner CCP, they got over 3,000 giveaways they're going to be giving away. These bags is full of, you know, everyday products, from dishwashing detergent to hygiene products, all kinds of stuff. Mm-hmm. They're even bringing some chocolate and Snicker Bar friends with us from Mars Bars as well too. So it's going to be such a fun day. One thing I'm really, really excited about, I don't know if I even told Ro this. Well, I think I did. We have a horse riding crew, a black horse riding crew from Fort Smith that's going to be with us. Awesome. That's doing free horse rides. A lot of people don't know the history behind black cowboys, but they are as old as the country. So I'm excited to have them up. Of course, the Fort Smith had their rodeo this past week. So we invite them to come up and be with us and celebrate Juneteenth with us as well, too. So plenty of stuff for families and kids to do this day.
Will that be on Emma?
This is on Emma Street.
But the horses will be on Emma?
So the horses will be on an adjacent street. Okay. This is Mill Street. Okay. Mill Street. So between us and Turnbull Square. So we're actually kind of extending the festival grounds a little bit this year because we have so much going on.
Stage still going to be on Emma Avenue?
Yes.
And
yes.
then a lot of the vendors and food under
the pavilion. And then we'll have up through the Turnbull, we'll have our fashion show and food court and all stationed by Turnbull Square.
You know, when I grew up, there were few festivals. I was in rural Arkansas. But mm-hmm. when there was a festival, it was everybody.
Yeah.
Multi-generational. Yeah. Mm-hmm, and I don't know if that happens as much as it used to. Mm. I think we can all kind of go to our ways.
Sure.
But one thing I've noticed about the last three or four Juneteenths, it's multi-generational, especially when I'm there.
Definitely.
Which is before, you know, it's too late.
Definitely. And I think Music Moves does a really good job of choosing musical performances from all of those age groups so that people will be able to relate to them. So
We're very intentional about that. And I think all three of us are from small towns. So, and that's a piece where I feel like Northwest Arkansas, one thing we love in Northwest Arkansas is family-friendly events and mm-hmm. outdoors.
Mm-hmm.
You know, third would be our Razorbacks. No specific order. But so we were very intentional about that. We want everybody to feel welcome. There'll be baby strollers everywhere. And there'll be grandmothers that's be sitting on the sidewalk.
Mm-hmm.
So, and we're really, really proud of that.
Interform, fashion show.
Yes.
That goes together.
Yes.
Yeah, so we're really excited about that part as well. One of the designers is Siobhan Cherie. She showed her line in Northwest Arkansas Fashion Week in March at the
Arkansas
Ledger.
Arkansas alum.
Yeah, exactly.
We went to school together. Yeah.
And then our sewing department, the Learn department, is going to be showcasing their designs as well. They showed some designs at Northwest Arkansas Fashion Week. So these are handmade things that people have put their time and energy to that have a Black or African-American cultural influence and inspiration. So we're really excited about that fashion show.
It's Saturday.
Yes.
This Saturday, June the 15th.
When does it start?
We start at 2 o'clock. We'll go probably almost to 10.
Mm, mm-hmm,
Well, we're scheduled to stop at 9:30, but it'll be a fun night. We'll get waves of people. You can go on our website, www.freedomfestivalar.com, to get the music lineup schedule, all the activities that'll be there as well, too. Plenty of information. There's plenty of parking surrounding the downtown Springdale area, plenty of street parking, city parking lot. So I would encourage everybody to get there early so you can get your spot.
What do you need to bring?
I would bring a fan, like one of those portable fans. Prepare. It's going to be hot. I mean, it's the middle. It's like June. So I would bring a fan. I would bring maybe some water bottles just in case you don't get to the food and drinks quick enough. And, you know, just bring your family and bring your freedom celebration.
Bring an umbrella.
Ah, bring an umbrella.
That's the cheat code.
For the
bring
shade.
An umbrella.
Yes. Absolutely. Yes. Absolutely.
The sun or the rain. Although I don't think rain's in the forecast.
Rain isn't in the forecast.
Not right now.
Rain isn't in the forecast.
Mm-hmm.
It's a clear day, bro.
Rain or shine. Right. Style Kyle. We're going to be out there.
But this is a festival. It's rain or shine. But we're excited. Thank you to our sponsors, our partners, CCP, U of A, NWA, U of A, Juneteenth Committee, Interform, Music Moves for putting this together. Of course, the Walton family and Tyson family foundation for helping us put this thing together. It's been a long journey. We are now the largest Juneteenth celebration in the state, with over 4,000 people that's in attendance. So we're excited about that, and we want to keep it growing and keep it here in Northwest Arkansas for ages for our kids to be able to enjoy.
That's right. Fashion show starts at 5. So if you want to see the fashion show, that's what time you need to be ready.
Will there be a walkway out there on?
Yes. Do you know where Turnbow is? Yes. Like, yeah. So that everybody's going to kind of present themselves at Turnbow. It's going to be super cool.
All right.
Are you walking?
I'm not walking unless somebody cancels shoo me in there. And I'm like, okay, well, I guess I'll do it.
She's
twist my arm.
She's extremely. Kyle. She's a boss lady now. We're waiting on her to return back to the runway.
Oh, thanks.
She's a boss lady.
You can
now.
Do both.
You can
do
I both. Can try.
I
can
play
try
drums both, and yeah. coordinate.
Yeah, the music mayor.
The music mayor. I like
yeah,
that.
That's right.
All right, Saturday 2 to probably 10.
Yes. Mm-hmm. Yes.
And it's free.
It's free.
I mean,
no,
you're going to have to pay for food or some
right,
food
right.
Trucks,
well, and I will say this. Thank you to Tyson Foods. We will be having free food, grill food, till 5 o'clock as well, too. So along with all the food options, all the ice cream options, all those things, we will have food till 5 o'clock as well,
free
too.
Food?
Free food.
Free
Kyle,
food. That, free that food. Is the wrong thing for him to
free
say
food.
To me.
Yeah. I'll so see you there.
It's a bunch. Right. It's a bunch going on, y'all. So yeah.
While supplies last.
Yes.
Right.
Yes.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
Thank you both for coming in.
Thank you so much,
Kyle. Good to see you, man.
Anthony Ball with Music Moves and Ro Bailey with Interform, two of the driving organizations behind the 2024 Northwest Arkansas Juneteenth Observation, the Freedom Festival, that takes place in downtown Springdale Saturday, beginning at 2. This is Ozarks at Large. That's Count Basie performing his signature tune, 1 o'clock Jump. Though first performed in Kansas City, Larry Tye writes that the song originally carried the more ribald title, Blue Balls. According to Tye's new book, The Jazz Men, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America, it was actually a Little Rock radio host who gave the tune its more air-friendly name. Larry Tye's book contains scores of interesting anecdotes like that, but it really flexes its historical muscle when detailing how the three legends battled Jim Crow to become global superstars and, as the book title suggests, change the country. This week, I asked Larry Tye about his desire to write a book about the three legendary musicians.
Kyle, I think that's a polite way of asking, why did the world need the 101st book on Ellington, Armstrong, and Basie? And the answer is, we didn't accept that. The 100 books before mine were looking at their music. Mine was trying to look at their lives off the bandstand to say that they had another half of their legacy that was equally momentous. And that's what I was trying to look at, what they did to make America a better place to live in.
Yeah, the last two words in the title are Transformed America. And, of course, their music did too. But what about their lives, especially in that first half of the 20th century, helped change America?
So I think what they did is they took their music into the homes of black men, of white men who would never have allowed a black to cross their threshold, and yet who wooed their sweethearts with the music of the gravel-throated Louis Armstrong or Duke Ellington. I think that white women who would have probably walked to the other side of the street if a black man were coming towards them in the privacy of their own living rooms, kicked off their high heels and tapped their feet to the music of the swinging Basie band. And I think that for once in America, race fell away as an issue as people opened their ears and souls to the magnificence of these guys' melodies.
Sure, in private they'd kick off their heels, but as you account in The Jazz Men how Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, Count Basie transformed America, they did not in much of the United States, and especially the Jim Crow South, when it wasn't private.
That is true, and that is also why when these guys went south to perform, if they went to the wrong restaurant and asked for lunch, or they went to the wrong hotel and asked for a room, they could be berated or beaten or worse. And so what they did was they hired private Pullman sleeping cars to go south with them. And if they were performing, let's say, in Fayetteville, to pick a city, and they would put that private Pullman sleeping car on a sidetrack, and when they got done with their concert at night, they would go back to their railroad car, knowing that the dining car workers would have a wonderful meal waiting for them, that the Pullman porters would have made a plush bed, and that they had safe space. And in return, what they did in the middle of the night, again in this closed capsule of the railroad car, they would perform a private concert for their Pullman porters. And I don't know about you, Kyle, but if I could go back to any moment in American history, it wouldn't be bad to have the Duke Ellington Band performing for just me in those incredible acoustics of a railroad car.
No, that would not be bad. Of course, there are three incredibly influential musicians and men. And I guess this makes sense when you think about how often they were touring, but their paths really didn't cross that often.
Didn't cross, and they didn't cross for a reason. These were three very different men temperamentally. Louis Armstrong was an over-the-top, show his heart in everything he did kind of guy. Duke Ellington was an aristocrat with that kind of a bearing, and Count Basie was the most private of the three. And I think what happened was that they had all kinds of opportunities to perform with one another, and they said wonderful things about each other, but I think they all had big enough egos that to share a spotlight was something that they didn't have to do and that they didn't want to do.
How much did they travel at the peak of their touring careers?
300 nights a year. They were out on the road what amounted to perpetually. They had their bands going year-round, which was a great thing for their side men and side women. They got paid every night whether they performed or not. But the only way to make that work was to perform all the time. And can you imagine being home just sort of one day or two a month? Was amazing.
Well, and you do detail that Louis Armstrong, Count Basie, Duke Ellington would not have always been the easiest men to be married to.
They wouldn't have been. They were men of deep faith. They all believed in God. They all prayed before meals, and they all read the Bible. And if you believe Duke Ellington, he read it cover to cover three times. But that didn't mean they adhered to the Ten Commandments. And the commandment about honoring a wife was something that all of them had trouble with. Louis Armstrong was married four times, and even with his fourth and longest-lasting wife, he admitted to not being faithful. Count Basie was married a mere two times, but his wife was so frustrated with his philandering on the road that she at least a couple times left him. And the only one to stay married to the same woman all his life was Duke Ellington, but he lived with his wife as husband and wife would live for only a couple years. And he had more mistresses than you could shake a stick at. And what that meant was the reason he stayed married was that all these mistresses wanted to marry him, and he had the perfect excuse. He said, I'm already married, and you wouldn't want me to fritter away my resources on an expensive divorce.
I'm talking with Larry Tye about his book, The Jazz Man, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. To me, one of the most fascinating parts of the book is as these men become more famous and then become incredibly globally famous, the way they have to navigate their public announcements or approaches or considerations when it comes to race. They are realists. They understand, you know, whether it's the 1940s or the 1970s, they understand that there is still segregation, there's still racism. But there's also the pressure from activists who want them to say and do more. What did you find out about how each of these three musicians and legends dealt with this dilemma?
So I'd like to just tell you very quick stories about the kind of racism each of them faced.
Please.
And what they did about it. And in the case of Count Basie, he performed one night at a Philadelphia theater where he got 10 standing ovations. And yet afterwards, when he went outside the theater, he had some white guy toss him a set of car keys and say, get my car, assuming he had to be the valet. What he did was, as early as 1945, he put something that was almost unprecedented in his contracts, saying that he would only play at venues that were integrated. And in those days, at the end of World War II, the idea of an integrated venue was still a novelty. What Duke Ellington did was he would try to get rooms in Black rooming houses or have that private Pullman sleeping car when he went south to Jim Crow America. But one time when he was in Virginia, in a town in Virginia that had no accommodations for him, his manager talked the manager of a whites-only hotel into taking him for the night. But the manager of the hotel explained, you will, of course, have to pay an extra fee for pillowcases and sheets, because we'll have to burn the ones that you were sleeping on, because no white would sleep in those sheets. What he did was, in the early 1960s, when he was pressed to join a sit-in in Baltimore at a restaurant that wouldn't serve blacks, he said no. The students who were staging the sit-in asked him a second time, and he said yes, and it made headlines across the world. He said, on the one hand, my music speaks for itself, but on occasion after occasion, he spoke out in a way that was dangerous for him to do, but he spoke out on racial issues. What Louis Armstrong did, Louis Armstrong was more than any of these guys accused of being an Uncle Tom or an Aunt Jemima. And yet in Arkansas in 1957, when the Little Rock High School, all white Central High, was ordered to be integrated, the governor of Arkansas, Orville Faubus, said, no way are we going to let blacks into our school. President Eisenhower said, I'm not going to send in federal troops to protect these kids. And Louis Armstrong spoke out. He called Governor Faubus a word that begins with M and ends with R, and I won't say on the air, but it was translated in family newspapers into an uneducated plowboy. He called our war hero, President Dwight Eisenhower, gutless. And I think it's no accident that not long after he did that, Eisenhower sent in federal troops to do precisely what Louis Armstrong said had to be done. He was one of the few people to speak out then, and the same guy who had been accused of being an Uncle Tom was now accused of being an unpatriotic American. So he couldn't get it right in terms of much of America. Either way, he did it. But he still did it in a way that I think was very courageous.
It's also interesting that some of the people who criticized him would label him as an Uncle Tom years later would say, I was wrong about that. I didn't completely fully understand or completely fully know what Louis Armstrong was doing without me being aware of it.
Yes. So on the one hand, I would say that's absolutely true, that lots of people who falsely accused him, ignorantly accused him of being an Uncle Tom, later on admitted that they had made a big mistake. And I can say that because I'm one of them. And I think that I assumed looking at the way he hammed it up on television and when he was on the stage, he had lots of handkerchiefs. He was perpetually wiping his brow. I mistook the fact that he was a brilliant entertainer for the fact that he couldn't be a respected and self-respecting artist. And I think that I feel badly about that. Lots of people felt badly about that. But in the end, most of America came to understand that this was an extraordinary entertainer and a genius.
I'm speaking with Larry Tye, author of the new book, The Jazz Man, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. You said at the beginning of our conversation that you wanted to approach their lives off the bandstand. You do very well, more than any book about any of these three I've read, but you also do discuss their music. And it's really kind of interesting and thrilling to read about Black, Brown, and Beige, the Duke Ellington piece that was really performed in its entirety once. What's the history behind that piece?
Wanted to write an opera, and he ended up realizing that it would be better as a symphony. And the piece, which was the longest piece he had ever done, ended up being a story of Blacks in America, starting in slavery, going through Reconstruction, and taking us into the civil rights era. And he said all the time that he wished that jazz would be renamed Negro music because it's telling the story of the Negro in America, and that's what he did in that symphony. And sadly, it got poor enough reviews that he never wanted it performed again, but it stands as one of his greatest works of art, especially when we understand the story behind it.
You also go into detail the difference between these gentlemen playing live and in the studio, and sometimes the studio is more welcoming, and sometimes I'd rather be in front of an adoring audience.
So that's true, and what they did was, so they all were discovered in part by hitting the one medium that mattered back then, which was radio. Duke Ellington was performing from a plantation-like cotton club in Harlem. Count Basie was performing from a dive bar in Kansas City called the Reno Club. And Louis Armstrong was recording in a tiny studio in the middle of Chicago where nobody really knew who he was. And all of these guys used radio to take their music beyond the venue they were playing in and to have all of America get to know them. So that when Count Basie performed in that dive bar, a producer in New York heard it on the radio and the next day jumped on a plane to Kansas City and signed up Count Basie. When Duke Ellington was performing in Harlem, people in Kansas and Arkansas and all across America could hear him. And when they came to New York, one of the first places they wanted to go was the Harlem Club to hear this great Duke Ellington, who they had gotten to know through their radio set. And it was brilliantly using the medium of the moment. They would have been, you know, ultimate internet people today because they were always at the cutting edge of what the medium was. And the medium was first radio, and then it was television, and then they were cutting millions of records, and it was easy for people to hear them lots of different ways.
And, of course, being Black touring musicians in the 20th century in the United States, the reality was you had to have white agents or managers or contacts, allies or supporters to protect you, but it wasn't always really protection. I mean, they all three lost a lot of money because of the way the system was rigged.
That's true. And what they did was they all three had Jewish managers. There was a synergy back then. There was a Black-Jewish alliance. Both groups loved storytelling. Both groups were outsiders. And all three had Jewish managers who got them the deals that they wanted and needed and took care of their finances. They also, all three, had mob connections because back in that era, in the early jazz age, it was also the era of prohibition where alcohol sales were banned in America. And the people who were selling alcohol under the table in speakeasies were mobsters. And mobsters knew that if they had great jazz musicians coming in and performing, people would come in, would buy their liquor, and it would work for both groups. It was the convenience of the moment with whatever deals that they did, because as you say, it was a white-controlled America, and they knew they had to make deals with whites, and they made them with the right people, and it worked out great on both ends.
Eventually, of course, all three are not just famous in the United States, they're famous across the globe. Their music is seen as a way to serve as an ambassadorship to the United States. But traveling for that many days, for that many years, in the hardships they endured, there's alcohol, there can be drug abuse, there can be, you know, relationships both with your band members and with, you know, members of the opposite sex. It can take a toll, can't it?
It took a huge toll, and all three of these guys did something that is unheard of today. Kyle, I'm sure that you're going to have a career that lasts 50 years, but not many of us do. And the idea that these guys for a full half century stayed at the top of their profession was amazing. But as you say, it took a toll. Louis Armstrong smoked marijuana twice a day for almost his entire adult life. Count Basie got addicted to gambling. And the first thing he do when he got to a new town was put on his yachting cap, flag a cab, and go to the nearest racing track where he could lose his money on the ponies. And Duke Ellington's addiction was mainly to, in addition to women, it was to superstitions. He had a million superstitions that he felt like he had to avoid the color green and brown because those suggested the ground, and maybe he'd go to his grave too early. He had all kinds of things that he was subject to. The idea that they had these foibles is not surprising. The idea to me that they had them and that that made them more flesh and blood and even more heroic to me in the end.
The name of the book is The Jazzmen, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. It's a wonderful book. Was there anything you couldn't find about any of these three musicians that you wish you'd been able to find?
What I wish I'd been able to do, I was able to find what I needed on each of them, including the secretive and enigmatic Count Basie, who we knew so little about. But what I wish I'd been able to do was to talk to them, to sit down for a day or for a month and just hear their stories firsthand. When you're coming and writing about people who are long gone, you have to rely on the people who are still here, and I interviewed 250 of them to get their stories. But the idea of being able to hear it firsthand and ask Louis Armstrong what it felt like to be the headliner at a Las Vegas casino and yet have to enter through the kitchen, or to ask Duke Ellington what it felt like to not be able to be served in a restaurant when he could be served in restaurants all around the world. It just, the indignities that these guys had to suffer and how they made it through them is a story that I wish I could have heard firsthand from them.
The Jazzmen, How Duke Ellington, Louis Armstrong, and Count Basie Transformed America. Larry Tye, thank you so much for your time.
It's been a pleasure. Thank you.
Larry Tye spoke with me via Zoom earlier this week. This is Ozarks at Large.
What kind of music comes to mind when you think of college-aged musicians hanging around a coffee house? Probably some acoustic folk, maybe some bongo-based world music. How about classical cantatas? You're on the Soundbeat. That's Bach you're listening to. The piece composed when he was the head of the Collegium Musicum of Leipzig, Germany. They were groups of amateur and professional musicians who would gather regularly in public locales, a bit like an upscale open mic night. The Leipzig group met at Café Zimmermann, a café house, as they say. Fitting then that this piece, some of Bach's lighter fare, was called the Coffee Cantata. Protagonist Lieschen refuses her father's requests to quit drinking coffee, calling it more delicious than 1,000 kisses and sweeter than Muscatel wine. But when her father refuses to allow her to marry, she relents.
though she would have a rider in any future marriage contract. She must be allowed at least 3 cups a day. Which sounds like an okay agreement for any marriage. Soundbeat is produced at the Belfer Audio Archive, Syracuse University Libraries. I'm Brett Barry.
The Bentonville Film Festival is underway this week, and it's not just films, but also workshops and panel discussions about film and how film can be an agent of change. Yesterday afternoon's panel, The Power of Women Investing in Women, explored navigating through male-dominated industries and included this reflection from Shannon Baker, the president of Gatesman Agency. She says her career in advertising began with her taking what she says was pretty bad advice.
Early in my career, I was often told, prove I'm wrong about you, right? Because I was perceived as being too strong, too bossy, too big a personality, too aggressive, and it's exhausting to keep up trying to fit this mold. Because let me tell you a really interesting and disheartening statistic about the industry of advertising. 99% of the 14,000 agencies that are in North America are run by men. So I didn't belong in that club. And to this day, to a certain effect, that still is the case. And so for me, I needed to make this shift. And I can remember the moment of clarity that it came, where I said, instead of focusing so much energy and so much heart into proving these people wrong about me, right, trying to change their minds, minds that I was never going to change, I said, you know what, let's funnel that energy into proving people right. Those people who believed in me, who supported me, who helped champion the ideas, you know, finding my tribe of people who could make a difference. And so for me, that was that pivotal moment in my career where I realized I can make a difference. And that difference of that shift of mentality to be able to say, you know, we can do things differently. And my family always said, you know, if you see something that you don't like and you want to change, you have a choice. You can either accept it and figure out a way to surrender to it, or you can change it. But in order to change something, you have to change. And so I started to, again, fuel the energy of positivity, fuel the optimism, fuel the ideas of let's bring people who don't fit the mold into advertising.
Shannon Baker, the president of Gatesman Agency, speaking yesterday in Bentonville during the Bentonville Film Festival panel, The Power of Women Investing in Women. We'll hear much more from that panel on tomorrow's Ozarks at Large. And the Bentonville Film Festival continues through the week.
This is 91.3 KUAF Fayetteville. Contributors to today's Ozarks at Large included Daniel Carruth and Jack Travis. Our thanks to YK Karenbauer and Jasper Logan for working to bring some of the Bentonville Film Festival to you on the show today.
We're going to have some more tomorrow and Friday and maybe Sunday on weekend Ozarks at Large as well. Matthew produced today's program in the Bruce and Ann Applegate News Studio 2. Our theme written and performed by Daryl Sean.
Kyle, this is a week of new experiences for you.
Tonight is going to be a night of new experiences.
There you go.
I'm meeting some friends and we're going to first meet at Geisinger's, you know, just up the Fayetteville Square. Then going to a new restaurant just off the other side of the square, Calle. Yes, and then going to go to, on Dixon Street, the Leroy, where they have duckpin bowling. Now, I have duckpin bowled before.
Where did you duckpin bowl before?
In Baltimore, Maryland.
Okay.
Where they still have a neighborhood duckpin bowling, and it's like the real deal.
Describe the difference for folks who may be unfamiliar.
With duckpin bowling?
Yes. I'm the people unfamiliar. Okay.
The balls are smaller and don't have holes.
Okay.
So you just palm them.
Just palm it.
It's a small wooden ball. You have 3 rolls per frame rather than 2, but the scoring is the same.
Okay.
And both.
Are the pins smaller?
Yes.
Okay.
They look like little squat.
Little ducks.
Yeah. I mean, if you squint, if I took off my glasses, they'd look like ducks. But it is so much fun. And I'm looking forward to it. The only place I've ever duckpin bowled, every time we go to Baltimore, which is about once a year because my wife has a conference, the NEE Casey conference up there. And we have great friends who live there. Every year we go there.
because it's so much fun. So I am so excited to have duck pin bowling in Northwest Arkansas.
It's big in Boston, too.
Yeah, Northeast.
Yeah.
Yeah. Maybe I'll talk about that tomorrow. Maybe not. I'm Kyle Callums.
I'm Matthew Moore.
The Scott Family Amazium in Bentonville invites guests to explore its newest exhibit, Wild Creativity, this summer. Guests can explore the wonders of nature and biomimicry with 10 unique hands-on design challenges. Tickets available in person or online at amazium.org.